Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
I'm buying stock in Andrew Wiggins.
Buy stock in him, but it's wrong sport there, Fonte.
That's kind of random. Pasta's random. I cannot stay with this young man. I have no. He doesn't do drugs, but you would think he does because no idea where he's going.
Oh my God, I'm salivating.
That's true. He is just naturally random that way.
I am not Michael Strahan.
95% of these drops, I have absolutely no idea where they came from. As long as they sound funny, that's all that matters. You know, during the break, yeah, you guys were bringing up. I totally forgot, Dan, that before Steven worked at this station, back when he was just some little 13-year-old kid writing for SF Bay CA, I booked him for a couple of your guys' shows that you did with our old friend Shamari Block.
Shout out Shamari.
I wonder what Shamari's up to. I remember he had a kid on the way last time I talked to him. That was a few years ago. So
he's
knee deep in fatherhood now.
Well, he's driving that BART train.
He's a BART operator?
Yes, he's a BART guy, man.
Wow, that's actually a pretty cushy job.
Yeah.
You get paid pretty good money, great overtime, great benefits, and then just go on strike every 5 years to get a raise. And you get to see that fabled front view of the BART train.
Well, he says that's a little monotonous, if I recall. He's just like, there's a lot of track you see through.
Well, you probably just, you're staring at track and hitting a start and a go button. I'll be honest, I would absolutely be a BART train operator.
Really?
That just seems like one of the, for how much you're paid versus what you have
Six figures?
Do. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you get paid close to $100K to basically hit a stop and start switch. I mean, I've stood there when I was a kid. I was very into trains as a little kid, like a lot of young boys are. And so I was one of those kids when I was like 5 years old or whatever. I would stand. I was a teenager too when I did this. I would stand at the front of the car and I'd watch the BART operators go because I want to see what they do. Start, sit back, in there, MacArthur Station, MacArthur Station. And they hit the slow down button. That's it. And they look out the window. Train is leaving the station. Daly City train. And then you just go. It's just like, I could do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, next station, Rock Ridge Station or Rock Ridge Station. Yeah, just.
And you're on that municipal dime. So when you retire, there's a nice pension there for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And you do overtime. I always love the overtime process with BART. You could just like switch with someone. If you work a shift that isn't your shift, that's considered overtime. I think they probably got rid of that because of how ridiculous of a loophole that is. But
I was fascinated by the Muni bus drivers when I was a kid.
See, bus driving, you actually have to do stuff. You have to look to your left into your right.
Yeah.
You have to press the gas pedal.
You got to pull over and pick people up.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like BART train operator. Everything does it for you. You just got to make sure the train doesn't go off the tracks. And even then, I'm not sure what you're going to do to prevent that. So,
see, I would be the bus driver that really like cracks down on if you paid or not. I would be annoying like that.
See, I wouldn't enjoy riding the bus.
Nobody,
with you,
by the way,
I don't enjoy riding the bus, just period. But.
Muni is now free. Nobody pays. I take Muni from
time
to time.
Is it free or just no one pays and no one cares anymore?
No one pays and nobody checks.
It's not actually free. It's just no one's enforcing the payment.
I am telling you 85% of the people, because
I don't pay.
That come on, nobody pays. And there is, you know, there's nobody to enforce them paying. So, I mean, God bless if you can get away with it. And I think that it's going to be inevitable. I know they're doing this in New York, that it's just going to be free. Mass transportation in big cities, I think like that of San Francisco, is going to be ultimately free, is where we're headed. I mean, it's free right now. I don't know anybody who pays.
It's the five-finger discount in a way.
But by the way, you used to book Steven Rizzotto when he was literally in high school on our show, and I thought that I was talking to some accomplished writer who is in his mid-40s.
Nah, he's 13 on the outside. He's 45 on the inside. So let's go out to the lines here. 888-957-9570 is the number. Thoughts on Justin Verlander, who needs to be the Giants MVP in the second half, or just any and all Giants takes, even if they're a little off topic. We take any and all Giants takes on this show, especially if they're coming from Josh in Arkansas. He's been on hold for a lot longer than I would have liked to have him on hold. Sorry about that, Josh, but hey, you're on the wrap. How's it going today, man?
It's been good. Hey, I've been on hold a lot like that. It's not, no problem there. But on the topic of who needs to be the MVP? I'm with you. It has to be Devers. We traded and gave up a haul for him. We're paying him a lot of money. We paid him to hit. He kind of needs a hit. But on the subject of the Verlander thing, while y'all are making the argument about run support and stuff like that, which is a valid point, but how many of those games did he already put them in a hole to where the bats are having to work themselves out of the hole instead of vice versa?
To answer your question, Josh, I have 7 such starts now, after including last night, where he went 5 innings or less and allowed 3 runs or more. So yeah, I would say, yeah, 7 of his 16 starts, it's been squarely on him putting the team in an early hole that they just weren't able to work themselves out of.
And that's pretty much just the case I was just trying to make. Like, I mean, the bats can only do so much as well. So, I mean, maybe it might be time to, like, give him a role like we did with Lincecum a lot while back and make him work in the bullpen or something like that, or just try to, like you said, make him have a couple of weeks of stress-free and just trying to work on his mechanics and see if he can improve from there.
No, I don't disagree with you. That's probably some of the easier options they have, and thanks for the call on that there, Josh. But, yeah, so far, Verlander, again, he's had 9 starts where he went 5 innings or more and allowed 3 or less earned runs. And in those starts, yeah, he pitched well enough to win, and the offense didn't do a lot here but to help him there. But overall, he has been more of a net negative than a net positive for the Giants this year. And listen, if they want to make the playoffs, they need to get production from that slot in the rotation, whether it be from him or elsewhere, whether they go to the trade market and look up one of the starters there. Maybe you're going to Baltimore. What can old man Charlie Morton, 41 years old, starting a 5.18 ERA right now, is that a guy where a change of scenery, does that help out? He's one of the more proven guys. Adrian Hauser is an option in Chicago. He's got a 1.56 ERA and 57 innings this year. He could be one of the more expensive guys, and he's getting absolutely awful, awful run support. He's getting 14 runs support in his 57 innings pitched. That's pretty bad. A guy who I think would be kind of interesting, Dan, is one Kyle Hendricks. He's got a 4.88 ERA with the Angels this year, getting some pretty good run support in 96 innings. But he's a guy that every time he pitches against the Giants, I don't know what it is, he just shuts them down.
Yeah.
And I got to wonder, I don't know, maybe get a guy like him. Just seeing the uniform every day, does that bring something out of him? That could be an interesting option for that 4 or 5 spot. But again, it's the options are kind of slim. One last name I want to throw out there, and some Giants fans are going to laugh about this one. It's Zach Littell, former Giant legend. He was here for a couple of years. Farhan Zaidi brought him in. He's 8-7 with the Rays this year, sporting a 3.56 ERA. The Rays, they're like, as they usually are, they're like sort of in the race, sort of not in the race. They're a game and a half like the Giants. They are a game and a half out of the wild card race. But should the Rays go into a bit of a spin in the next few days here, might they become sellers? That's a name to keep an eye on. At the end of the day, none of these names are sexy names, but they could be names that are at least good enough to give you some production out of what we're going to call that 5 spot in the rotation now, as Alex Pavlovich called it when we had him on for the Giants, instead of throwing Justin Verlander out there every 5 days.
Are you ready for my question?
I'm ready for your question now.
Pasta, you can get in on this as well. This is going to be pretty obvious for you, I'm assuming, and you as well, Pasta.
Right, let's.
But so with the trade deadline looming, what is, and I don't know, this is somewhat subjective, because, I mean, Giants baseball goes all the way, obviously, back to New York. But what was the best, the most effective, most impactful? Eyes up here. Trade deadline acquisition for the San Francisco Giants. Again, this is pretty obvious, I think.
What in what time frame? Just overall, or
what do you mean? What time for the best acquisition?
Ever, not in like the last
ever.
15
well,
years.
Again, no. I mean, I'm looking at the history of the franchise. It's pretty obvious, but there might be something. Again, this is sort of like this isn't, you know.
And then are we basing this off of like war or something that they did? What's the
their impact to the team?
Okay, I am gonna go with. You know what? This is might be a bit of a... I'm going to go Marco Scudero.
Pasta?
Scudero's a good one. I'm thinking of Hunter Pence, but I feel like you're going to kind of go old school on us.
It's Marco Scudero.
Yeah. Oh.
For Charlie Culberson.
Mm-hmm.
Hit 362 from the deadline, and obviously what he did against the Cardinals MVP, and then, of course, won a game against the Detroit Lions, or Tigers, rather. In the World Series, Marco Scudero is on a planet by himself. As we near the deadline, if you can steal again from the Colorado Rockies and get another Marco Scudero, which obviously changed the entire... And a lot of people like to think it was Ross, but keep in mind, Ross was sort of like you know, he didn't play until he really didn't play in the second half of the season. It wasn't until the postseason when he really made a name for himself.
Yeah, that's a good one there. The one I was also going to bring up, I just want to make sure and confirm that he was indeed a trade deadline acquisition. And yes, he was. So I am going to throw his name out there. It's the guy who was on the broadcast last night. No, I'm not talking about Dave Fleming. I'm talking about one Javier Lopez.
Yeah.
He was acquired from the Pirates at the deadline in 2010. And when you talk about impactful giants, as a lefty guy out of the pen, he was about as impactful as they come as one of those loogie guys, you know, the lefty one out guys. And when I look at the guy that they acquired or they brought up last night, as I bring up his Fangraphs page, Matt Gage sporting a Dodger hat on his Giants Fangraphs page. Come on, Fangraphs. Let's fix that rather quickly, please. This is a guy, when I look at Matt Gage and what he brings to the table here, again, solid lefty. He's got a 142 ERA and 25 career innings at the major league level. Has done very well against lefties in the minor leagues. Lefties are hitting around 200 against him over the last few years. The minor leagues, it's harder to find the specific splits. So I only have general numbers for you here. Great cutter, four-seam combo there. Great at jamming lefties inside with the cutter. Righties absolutely crush this guy. Righties hitting around 300 off of him in the minor leagues. So this is a guy who, prior to the one to the three batter rule, he would have been, if he was born 10 years earlier, Matt Gage could have been one of the great loogie guys in baseball, much like Javier Lopez was. Unfortunately, that is not the case, but a solid debut from Matt Gage. If he can pitch well enough, maybe that takes the pressure off of trying to solve the bullpen issue for the Giants at the trade deadline. But the big issue, and this is where I want to get into, kind of hopefully to finish out the show here, it is going to be the offense at the end of the day, because the offense that's left Verlander out to dry more times than not, despite his poor pitching, it's the offense that strung 11 hits together and got more double plays than runs as a result. It's the offense that needs to be better. And for that to happen, and I look at my second half MVP, it has to be Rafael Devers. Like, this is why Devers was brought in. The Giants, now I know you can say, like, oh, the Giants, they've been playing pretty well when Devers hasn't been good. And, like, yeah, they kind of had, they've been keeping their head above water, somewhat speaking. I believe they still have a sub-500 record since acquiring Devers. But this is the guy that, simply put, this team will not make the playoffs if Rafi Devers is not hitting. I feel like the Giants absolutely need Rafi if they want to be in the playoffs. And I know without this Rafi in the lineup, yeah, you still have a solid lineup with, you know, Flores and Dom Smith kind of handling things at first base. But Rafi Devers is like, there's the Iron Man suit, and then there's the Iron Man suit when it has that new upgraded Palladium core. Like, that's what Rafi Devers is. He is the new enhanced Mark 42 Iron Man suit, whereas the Giants were used like the Mark 5, you know, before he arrived. They absolutely need him to elevate this team into playoff contention, because the Padres, I know they've had a worse statistical offense than the Giants this year. That lineup is still full of dudes up and down that lineup. And you know A.J. Preller is going to do something at the deadline to make the Rockies better. Or sorry, make the Padres better. The Dodgers, they're getting Blake Snell and they got Tyler Glasnow back. Blake Snell soon to follow. Those will basically act like pitching. Those will basically act like deadline acquisitions, especially if those
Blake
guys.
Blake Treinen's coming back.
Blake Treinen will be coming back. So they're getting a lot of guys back who are going to be like trade acquisitions. And that's before even factoring what they do at the deadline. You got to figure that around the rest of the league, the Phillies and Mets, they're going to be battling it out in their division. The loser of that division, whoever second place, they'll probably claim one of the wild cards there. And the Phillies, they got one of the great executives in Dave Dombrowski running the show, and he's getting up there in age, and I got to imagine he's getting a little bit desperate in Philadelphia, because they got close in 2023. They lost to the Astros, and the window on the Phillies core, like the end of that window is coming. You got a bunch of guys in that Phillies lineup. They're in their early 30s right now. They only got that window is going to start to shut soon. And you got to figure that there's a little bit of desperation to get things done in Philly and win a title there. The Mets, they've invested so much money in that team. Steve Cohen, you know, he wants to win. They'll try and add someone. The Brewers have surged into the race. They've done it on the back of a lot of rookie talent. They definitely have the assets that they can use to acquire someone at the trade deadline and make their team better. All this is to say that getting Rafi Devers right making him look like every night like he did last night. If we get that Devers to show up, that's going to have a ripple effect on the rest of this lineup. It's going to make things easier for Adamas, makes things easier for Ramos, makes things easier for Chapman. These guys don't have to press as much because they got a guy carrying the load who is built to carry that load. And so if they can get Devers to get up to that level, I think it'll just make everything easier for the rest of the lineup there. And this team will have a legitimate shot at making the playoffs. If that does not happen, we're going to be having a lot of very difficult conversations at the end of the season.
I heard a writer who covers the Red Sox for the Globe, and he was talking about Devers, and he said, yes, he's a streaky hitter, but when he's on, there's nobody like him. There's nobody in baseball like him. And that's, I think, to your point, what the Giants need to see is a guy like Brandon Belt would do this for maybe 10 days where he'd carry a team. They need a guy who just simply carries them and is squaring everything up and is hitting everything hard and does it for a good month and a half. And that's the Devers that everybody's sort of waiting to be unveiled. It's by all accounts, it's coming, it's imminent, but it needs to arrive. And I think we're all sort of on board with that. You know, one thing that just jumped out at me last night in watching the Giants' futility as a hitter, and I don't want to sound like, you know, Pat Burrell's got to go or anything like that, but just from a guy sitting on his couch, and the Giants have been really good in terms of one of the few things they've done offensively is that they've been really judicious at the plate. And I think I want to say they're like in the top five when it comes to walks, one or two in Major League Baseball.
Some cases more than others. I did have issues with how quickly some of those at bats with runners in scoring position went last night, Dan. Not to kind of derail your point here, but or in the third inning, top of the third inning, after a long inning from Justin Verlander, what does Patrick Bailey do? First pitch pops out. There are some at bats that could go a little bit longer, but this is a more patient team than most at the plate.
Well, that's my point, is that some players are patient, but watching the Giants, especially last night, it's a team that some of their best hitters come to the plate and they have no approach, or so it seems. Willy Adames has been on fire over the last month, but when I watch Willy Adames hit, it's almost as though he has no approach, or he has, you know, no structure. I remember I interviewed Tony Gwynn back in the day in his last All-Star game. Thank you very much. And I interviewed Tony Gwynn. It was an All-Star game, and it was his last All-Star game.
01?
Is that the last? Yeah, 01. So I'm a young sportscaster, and I talked to Tony Gwynn, and then afterwards, and this is Tony Gwynn, one of the nicest guys ever, he sat there and literally talked to me, just me and my producer, about hitting for about an hour or about 45 minutes. And he was talking about, well, with the interview and then, you know.
He got a first-hand hitting lesson.
That's him. And what I took away from it, he's like, yeah, I got a natural swing path and I'm a good athlete. But he's like, you want to know why this sort of pudgy guy is one of the greatest hitters of all time? He's like, I watch film on pitchers, and when I go to the plate, I'm looking for a pitch, because that's the game within the game, right? Mm-hmm. Pitchers are going to offer you, they're going to give you that slider like to that of Jung Hoo Lee that's low and outside. They're going to offer you pitches that they want you to hit. Mm-hmm. And then for the hitter, you have to stay within yourself and wait for their mistakes so that they come into your wheelhouse. And he's like, it's just this thought process that if you pay attention to it, you can be successful if you're a Major League Baseball player. But his gripe was that a lot of today's young players don't put in the time and don't come to the plate with an approach. And when I watch the Giants and I watch Willie, watch Shohei or watch Aaron Judge hit, Aaron Judge specifically, there is a discipline to his strike zone. And sometimes when I watch the Giants, it's just like some of their best players, I'm like, what the hell are you offering at? I mean, that's easier said than done when you're sitting at home and somebody's throwing a 95-mile-an-hour slider coming off the table.
But when it's constantly the low and away slider that Willy Adames loves, that Elliot Ramos loves to chase, that low and away slider has pissed me the hell off, Dan, all year long. It is absolutely been.
I'm so upset!
Thank you, Nick, again, for the second time today. Dodger fan Nick in San Jose. Big Warrior fan, though. That's why we love him. Dan, who do you need to be the MVP of the second half?
Well, since Devers is the obvious choice, I'll ride Matt Chapman.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because I think Chapman is so important to that team. And I think he's their best player. I think that in terms of position player up to this point, he has been sort of by the way, just sort of a side note, Elliot Ramos, who's finally beginning to hit a little bit, but there's nothing routine with him defensively anymore. Taking the ball out of his glove.
I've never seen a guy fumble in exchange as often as he does. He makes up for at times. He's had some good throws, but woof, what an adventure in the outfield.
What's going on there? This is going from bad to worse. Anyways, getting back to me, I like Chapman. I think he's sort of like, you know, if he's going well, he's so good defensively, and he's another streaky guy at the plate that I think he could be your MVP in the second half.
Steven Rizzotto, who do you need to be the second half MVP for the Giants if they're going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, no, I think Ramos is a good one. I'm going to go with Willy Adames. I think Adames is a guy that has heated up before the All-Star break. He had a little trouble adjusting. He was kind of swinging at everything in the first half, in the first few months of the first half. And he's picked it up the last month or so, maybe even more than a month. And what I'm noticing with him at the plate is he's driving the ball to right field a little bit more. He's hitting for more power during this past stretch. He's being more disciplined at the plate. And the biggest thing, even ahead of all of that, is he's playing better defense. And that was the one thing we talked about with him where it was like, okay, he's struggling at the plate, but can he play better defense? And we're looking at the defensive numbers going up a little bit. He's now ranked among some of the top shortstops in the game defensively. He's flipped the page on that part of his season. I offensively, the lineup just looks so much longer when he's a part of it. And also I have an X factor, just a little small X factor. This is just a take, you know, being in radio for a few months here, I learned that the hot take is something that is mastered. So here's a hot take for you. The most important player for the Giants might be Hayden Birdsong. We were talking a lot about pitchers, right? And how the Giants could amplify this rotation a little bit and how they're going to manage these young guys in their innings and if they have an innings limit and if they don't. If Hayden Birdsong could take the step that Logan Webb took in 2021, he is your Game 3 starter, and I feel pretty good about that. So that's kind of an under-the-radar one that I have for you.
That's a big step.
I like that. Let's get into that maybe on the other side a little bit, too. I want MVPs, and yeah, let's get in because it's not going to just be one guy. One guy will make a big difference, but you do need those secondary guys as well. So let's get into that on the other side. Plus, we got lineups for today's games. I will reveal that on the other side as well. Final stretch here of today's edition of the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. I'm Sam Lubman. That's Dan Devone. The voice behind the glass you're hearing is one Steven Rizzotto. Finish up with some lineups, some second half X factors, and just keep having fun on the show. So that and more, all that brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Oh, heck yes.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, the best Giants talk in the Bay on 95.7 The Game.
It is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. 888-957-9570 is the number you can call or text us on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. We are coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, Laughing Monk Righteously Brewed in San Francisco. This has been a very fun show this morning as we are about 35 minutes away from first pitch. Sam Lubman along here with Dan Devone, Steven Rizzotto in the back, pressing all the buttons, keeping us on air. And we got some lineups, thank you, Jimmy Butler, that we can share with you. Starting with the Giants, Elliot Ramos will be leading off in left field, another adventure in left field today possibly, as the Giants are going against the lefty, Eric Lauer, so a lefty on the mound. That's not at all encouraging. Rafi Devers batting second and DHing. Wilmer Flores is in the lineup today. He will be batting third and at first base. Matt Chapman is going to be your cleanup hitter, batting fourth at third. Willy Adames at shortstop, he'll be hitting fifth. Casey Schmidt in the sixth spot, playing second. Jung-Hoo Lee dropped down to the seventh spot, despite hitting Jung-Hoo Lee hitting .317 on the month so far. Dan, he is hitting seventh in center field.
He's got to be back in the leadoff, though.
I agree. I want to get to that in a second. Luis Matos is batting eighth in right field, and Patrick Bailey in the squat hitting 270 this month as he's starting to turn this around. He will be your cleanup hitter. And then, of course, Logan Webb on the mound for the Giants. And, you know, we're talking about MVPs. We want to talk about other X-factors.
Wait, before we
here.
Do that, somebody's giving a nice little nugget here. I don't. Mm-hmm. It's not verified, but you see it on the text line there. Doing a little Pablo Sandoval with Pat, with Mr. Bailey, who apparently is much better from the left side of the dish. He's a switch hitter, mm-hmm. obviously, and hitting almost 100 points better from the left side as opposed to the right side.
Yeah, and that's always kind of been his thing. That's why when he came up as a rookie and he was doing so well from the right side, it was really surprising. And a lot of people weren't really buying into it because he's never been great from the right side. He is definitely a guy who I think should just be hitting lefty, you know, every single time, which I don't know why switch hitters don't do that. Like when there's one side that you clearly hit well on and one side you don't. Remember, Pablo Sandoval did this for a minute.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, he wasn't hitting very well for him. I believe it was the right side, so they had him hit only lefty for a little bit.
He hated it.
And he went back to it. I don't understand why hitters, like, I get if you're a switch hitter, you want to actually be that switch hitter. But when the evidence is so overwhelming that for a guy like Patrick Bailey, who I'm looking at the YouTube chat, at Tribe in the YouTube chat, and was, I believe, no in the YouTube chat, says it's got to be Bailey when talking about team MVPs. And Bailey is absolutely an X factor for this Giants team in the second half, because the reason he's in the lineup as often as he is, obviously, is because of the defense. He's one of the better ones at throwing runners out. Blocking pitches can be not always great because he kind of does that one knee down thing, which I wish he would not do when there are runners on base to try and steal that low strike. But yeah, Patrick Bailey, again, starting to come around with the bat a little bit. Hopefully it's real and not just a hot streak here, because again, the Giants need as much offensive help as they can get. And if Bailey can kind of be that guy who adds a little bit more thump to this lineup here the rest of the way, that's going to have huge results for the Giants, because just having that little bit of pop down there in the 8 or 9 spot would be very invaluable for this team.
Well, yeah, and you asked earlier, you were wondering what it is that he's doing differently and why he's improving. I think it was just a law of averages. There was nowhere to go but
like
up.
Eventually he was going to come around, yeah.
I mean, at some point, the ball is going to start finding the turf. So he's just being more Patrick Bailey. And to go along with his defense, it's good to see. He's now, you know, he was justified as starting, even going through all those difficulties. And now this is obviously something that they needed. And just, you know, it justifies his playing every day, certainly. I don't have issues with the offense. I know, call me out of my mind, but when you go through the lineup and...
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Wow, I
just Coach
shot...
Kerr from the top row.
My God, the kid just... Pasta, for crying out loud. I thought we were boys. That just was...
I agree with you. Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Right cross.
As I throw you under the bus.
I agree with you. Yeah, I can tell. No, but when I look at this lineup, 1 through 9... It makes sense to me for the first time this year. When I look at Schmidt at second, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. The guy has potential pop, and he's been one of the most solid hitters over this latter part of the season. Adames at short, obviously. Chapman at third in the outfield. Elliot Ramos, say what you will, but you know he was the best player on this team and one of the better players on this team for the first part of the season. Jung-Hoo Lee in center and Yastrzemski in right. It's not the 27 Yankees. But to go along with the pitching and the bullpen, like, I think that's enough offense if those guys can just play to their potential.
And that's the key phrase right there, play to their potential, because I do believe this lineup, and when we had Pavs on, he kind of said it, there really is no set position that they absolutely have to upgrade in this lineup right now. I think the Giants are very pleased with the production they're getting from Mike Yastrzemski. He's a much better fielder than he's a great defensive right fielder, mm-hmm. and he's a much better hitter than a lot of people give him credit for. The problem is he's not as good of a hitter as I think Giants fans want him to be, so that's where the discourse comes there. Patrick Bailey, he's hitting 270 this month. If he can hit 240 from the All-Star break on, I will absolutely take that, because I think that's what he's capable of doing.
No, the league average is around 245.
Yeah, if he could even hit 220 the rest of the way, I would take that. That would be a significant upgrade from what he was doing in the first half here. This lineup, when you do look at it, on paper it is good enough, but where this team falls apart, I do think that overall this offense is playing about up to expectation, When the team falls apart, though, it's the lack of timely hitting. And that's kind of where a offense that's on the fence, so to speak, really starts to go south, is when they can't come through on those clutch situations. You had last night, this team goes 0 for 9 with runners in scoring position. Matt Chapman, 0 for 3 with runners in scoring position. You know, Willie Adames had one. Rafael Devers had an 0 for with runners in scoring position. I think they only had one at-bat each with runners in scoring position. But when your big guys aren't coming through in that situation, then it's almost twice as devastating because you almost kind of expect those guys to come through there. When it's your ancillary guys like a Wilmer Flores, like a Casey Schmidt, like a Jung-Hoo Lee, you know, it doesn't hurt as much when those guys don't come through there because they're not the big dudes in the lineup. You need the big dudes to come through. And the fact that it's everybody in this lineup, though, is not coming through with runners in scoring position.
Let me ask you this. Wouldn't you rather have to deal with that dilemma where the big guys are not coming through, but you know they have the potential because that's why
you know it's coming.
They're
exactly.
The quote-unquote big guys. Or would you rather be a giant team, as we have seen in the past, where you don't have a shortstop? Who was the shortstop? Nick Ahmed?
Yeah.
Like, there were such glaring...
There's hope in this lineup.
There was glaring holes on this team. When Longoria left third base before Chapman got here, it's like, what are we doing over there?
Try to make out with J.D. Davis, which for a time, J.D. Davis was working.
And left field before Elliot Ramos was able to solidify that. I mean, my point being is that there were such voids on this baseball team that when you look at it now... Now, granted, it's not the Dodgers, but it's still much... They're in a much better space today than they have been, I'd say, over the last 5 years.
Exactly, yeah. They have, for the most part, they have the same guys going out there every day. Now, you got some spots that are going to be platooned just a smidge. That's why you got Ramos in right field today against the lefty, Eric Lauer. The Giants, they want to see, because they need to kind of showcase Luis Matos, too, a little bit. He needs to show that he could put the bat on the ball against lefties, because that's where his value is. I've talked with coaches on the Giants. They believe in the bat-to-ball skills a lot with Matos. So we'll hopefully see in these next couple weeks he'll get some run here. And then, of course, first base with Wilmer Flores and Big Dom Smith, they'll be kind of holding down that corner of the infield, I believe, the rest of the year because, again, I just don't want to put Rafi Devers at first base right now. But other than that, though, and you look at those two positions being platooned, so to speak, and it makes sense. The rest of the lineup, though, is pretty set, which I do like, and it gives me hope that these guys will figure it out. But we're talking about, you know, there's team MVPs and then there's team X factors. We mentioned Patrick Bailey as one. I saw from Andis Brown in the YouTube chat, he's throwing Robbie Ray out there as a major X factor. I do agree with that. But you mentioned Jung-Hoo Lee and how you want to see him lead off. And I agree. I don't like seeing Jung-Hoo Lee hitting in the meat of the order. This team got off to a 19-10 start, Dan, at the start of this season. And Jung-Hoo Lee hit .320 during that stretch. And I've said this before, and I'm not saying that Jung-Hoo Lee was the reason, you know, the capital T, capital R, the reason why the Giants got off to that great start this year. But I don't think it's a coincidence either that when Jung-Hoo Lee was hitting his best this season, the Giants were playing their best because he is a table setter.
Yeah.
Whether it's in the leadoff spot, whether it's in the three spot, he needs to be put into positions where it's the goal is drive the ball to the gap. I feel like ever since he's been hitting lower in the lineup, he's gotten in his head that he needs to be putting the ball in the air more. And that's just translated
I'm going to disagree with you for a second and let you continue your point. I think driving the ball in the gap is where he got into trouble. There's a difference when you're table setting. You just get on anyway. You go the other way. Just get on, put pressure on the defense because you got speed and you can swipe second base, get yourself in scoring position, and score runs. That's what you need a leadoff hitter to do, which he's equipped to do. But to your point, when he started trying to drive the ball because they moved him in the lineup, now he's finding, like, you know what? I can't go the other way. I can't drag a bunt because I've got ducks on the pond. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to drive them in. I don't want to rely on him driving anything.
He's not an RBI guy.
Yeah.
No, I think maybe drive the ball is the wrong word I use there. Because at the beginning of the year, like you've mentioned numerous times, he's a dead pull hitter. At the beginning of the year, though, he was using all sides of the field. I remember having a conversation with Ron Rodas about this. We were having, you know, we remarked about, like, he's had one of the best early of the season approaches, Jung-Hoo Lee. And using the entire field. And so maybe drive the ball is the wrong word. He was really good at just whacking the ball to all sides of the field. Contact high. Be a singles guy. be a doubles guy. When I say drive, I mean, I do think that that 399 marker out in left and that 415 marker out in right center, those are the spots that he should be aiming for when he kind of drives the ball, line drives, not power hit, just hit solid contact base hit doubles out to those parts of the yard. That's where you'll do your most damage. Or if you're just a slap happy singles hitter, like a Luis Arraez, say what he only hits singles. That's great. He gets on base. He moves the line along. Like, that's why he's one of the better top lineup guys in the league and why he's won multiple batting titles. You could be successful as a singles guy. That's why, again, it seems crazy to say this, but I would want Jung-Hoo Lee to be put back in that one or three spot, because then it puts the mentality in his head, you're a table setter. Just get on base, get a base hit, draw a walk. Don't worry about driving in runs. Your job is to score runs. Let the big dudes behind you drive you in. That is not your job. And that's why I like to see the Giants impart onto him here in the second half, because him trying to get under the ball, him trying to be a drive the runners in guy, it's not working. And the way they keep hammering him into the middle part of the lineup, I feel like you're wasting this season of Jung-Hoo Lee. And if you don't trust him at the top of the lineup, you know what I would do? Throw him in the bottom lineup. Throw him in the nine spot. So then he acts as like a secondary leadoff guy. Mm. So where he could still be a table setter guy, but you also need to worry about him being at the top or middle of the lineup where you clearly just, you shouldn't be trusting him right now.
Well, the problem with the Giants is even if he sets the table, you need guys in the middle of the lineup that are going to take advantage of that. So that sort of gets us right back to where we started.
But I feel like you do have that, though. That kind of goes into what you were saying is, in past years,
no, you do. But
yeah, you don't have those beefy guys in the past. You do have that now.
You do, but my point is they're not coming through. So that's the issue with the Giants, is that even if Jung-Hoo Lee is getting on board as the number one guy, the Giants 3, 4, and 5 guys aren't doing anything.
You know, and I'm cool. I'm not cool with it, but I would rather have a world where Jung-Hoo Lee is getting on base and not coming around to score than a world where Jung-Hoo Lee is walking back to the dugout with his shoulders slumped because he's trying to do something that he is just quite frankly not meant to do, which is be a middle of the lineup RBI guy. I'm cool with him just getting on base and then letting the big boys try or fail to do their job. Stop asking Jung-Hoo Lee to do the job of the big boys in the lineup.
I've seen Jung-Hoo Lee literally come to the plate with runners in scoring position and the third baseman is playing back. Now, a typical Jung-Hoo Lee should be able to take advantage of that.
A bunt. Absolutely.
But he can in that situation because he knows he's got to drive in somebody from second base. So it compromises Jung-Hoo Lee as a hitter to a certain degree.
And it puts a level of strain on a hitter because let's not forget, this is still basically Jung-Hoo Lee's rookie year. It's his rookie year 2.0. So he's still learning what it takes to be a big leaguer in a full big league season here in USA Baseball. So he's got basically two adjustments he needs to make. He's trying to make the adjustment from the KBO to MLB, which is a very difficult adjustment in its own right. And he's also just making the adjustment as a first-year player at the big league level. You know, even though he had a couple months, a month or so last year, but then that kind of goes into this is his rookie year 2.0. So what the Giants are doing, putting him in these situations that he's just not really meant for, I believe it's just making it even more difficult for him to kind of shake himself out of these doldrums that he's in, put him into a role that he can be comfortable in, take some of the thinking off of his plate, and just simplify it for him.
You know, when you think of good leadoff hitters, when I was growing up, and he's not Ricky Henderson, but if Ricky Henderson walked, it's like...
it's a double or a triple.
Well, yeah, but wheels were in motion immediately. Like now all of a sudden, there's the cat and mouse game with the pitcher trying to keep him on. The catcher now, his attention's divided. It got things generated. And that's, they don't have that guy, and they do, but he's hitting seventh today. So is it Robert Melvin Pasta? Is that the way we're referring to Bobby these days?
After losses, it's Robert Melvin. After wins, it's Bob Melvin. That's how we're doing this now.
He replaced Gabriel Kapler.
Yep. I guess Bruce doesn't have a long version of his name, so it's just
no,
it
doesn't,
there.
Samuel.
It does not. Thank you very much, Steven. See, Steven doesn't, it's already there. Samuel, Daniel, Steven-iel, doesn't work
it's
that way.
It's Dante, but that's all right.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
No, it's Dante.
Oh, okay, yeah, you said it well enough, you would have You would have got me there. So, yeah, Jung-Hoo Lee, absolutely one of the X factors in this lineup. And, again, I look at the leadoff guy today, Elliot Ramos. Boy, it would be good to get him going again. I asked him, I believe it was Saturday after the game, you know, just how you're feeling at the plate. And he knows that he's been struggling. And he said that he felt very close to kind of breaking out of this. Hopefully what we saw last night, got a couple hits last night. Hopefully that's a sign that he's kind of starting to find his stroke at the plate again, because he's another guy. I think he's been hitting around 220 ever since the start of June. And he's a guy that he needs to hit the ball, because the more he hits the ball, the more we're talking about that versus what he does when the ball gets to him in the field.
It's a bar of soap.
It really is. It's when the guy can't even twitch the glove from his glove to his hand. Shohei hit a fly ball, I believe it was on Saturday. Shohei hit a fly ball out to the 381 marker in left field that landed 379 feet. No, it was not gone. It was gone, but caught at the wall. We do have that drop somewhere, too, by Elliot Ramos. Because I'm watching Ramos go back to the wall there, and he squares up. I'm thinking, oh, man, I hope he can catch this. Like, this is the guy, he's squaring up in the process of catching a fly ball, and I'm wondering if he can still catch the fly ball. That is how down bad it is right now with Elliot Ramos on defense.
Yeah,
routine fly balls do not feel routine.
It's the complete other end of the spectrum when you think about the corner outfielders for the Giants. I am so secure when there's a can of corn out to right field and you got Yastrzemski, or even if there's something headed to the gap, I feel good that he's going to take the right angle and make the right defensive play. Anything that goes out to left field, it's like, oh, it's like Dave Kingman way back in the day. Like, who the hell knows what's going to happen here?
So, yeah, again, taking the mystery out of Ramos will be good. So he's one of the X factors there. And then, of course, I want to go back to what one of our YouTube chatters said. Let me just, Andus Brown, he had a good name. Robbie Ray. You know, we talk about the hitters here. But, Dan, I feel like we know what we're going to be getting from Logan Webb the rest of the way. We all feel very confident that when Webb takes the mound, he'll give this team six innings, one or two allowed. He's going to have this team in prime position to win the baseball game. Robbie Ray, though, a great first half from Ray, but he's going to need to keep it going in the second half. And he's a guy who he's walked a lot of guys and not gotten burnt from it. He's gotten a lot of good run support. He has, I don't want to say he's been lucky this year, but for as unlucky as Justin Verlander has been at times, it's kind of been the opposite of Robbie Ray in terms of the run support he has been getting. And right now the Giants have, basically, if Webb and Ray are lined up in a series like they are in this one, in two of those three games, you feel very, very good about the Giants' chances. And Robbie Ray is going to have to keep that going through the entirety of the second half in his first full season back since Tommy John surgery. Like, you talk about no margins for errors, Dan. I think Robbie Ray is operating with a very slim margin for error in terms of he has to keep what he did in the first half. He can't let up in the second half if this team is going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and the same holds true with Logan Webb to a certain degree. I guess I don't, and I think it's only natural for people to sort of have these reservations about Robbie Ray and as to whether or not he could keep it up for the entire season. But I think he's earned our trust, hasn't he? I mean, this is a former Cy Young Award winner. He's a veteran pitcher. And yeah, he's been the benefactor of some big runs, but he's also been very, very good.
And no, he absolutely has. No, and I'm not trying to put some doubt on Robbie Ray there. But it is one of those things. It is the reality. As well as Robbie Ray has pitched in the first half, that's great. You got to keep it going. It's just you can't let up for at all, because that's when you think about how the amount of question marks are going to be around Landon Roop. The amount of question marks are going to be around Hayden Birdsong. And Rizzotto made a great point. Birdsong is absolutely an X factor for this team in the second half, because we know how good he is when he's right. If he can get those command issues fixed, which I think he can, he's 23 years old. He's only been in professional baseball for 2-3 years. He's clearly not a finished product. He's still trying to find himself and what kind of pitcher he is. You still need him to, exactly, thank you, Robbie Ray. You still need Hayden to kind of get to that level we all know he can be at. And that's kind of be the underlying kind of thing to keep an eye on for the Giants is there's a lot of guys they're going to be counting on in the second half here. Jung-Hoo Lee, Hayden Birdsong, Landon Roop, Randy Rodriguez. There's going to be a lot of pressure on these guys in situations where they haven't really had that kind of pressure put on them. And are Giants fans and are the Giants willing to eat any developmental hiccups that might come in the second half while also dealing with the stress of a playoff rush?
And it's something you can't simulate or anticipate until they're in it. And you have no idea how a young pitcher is going to respond into those big moments. But I think that it's sort of exciting when you think about a young pitcher potentially being that guy and coming into his own and having, you know, you made the comparison, Pasta, to Logan Webb. If Hayden Birdsong can be that guy or come out of nowhere and be, I mean, look at Mizorowski. Like, did Milwaukee really factor him into things at the beginning of the season? They knew they had this prospect.
They definitely didn't think he'd be this good.
Did they think he'd be an all-star candidate? I mean, and Mizorowski is the number one now with Milwaukee. So I guess what I'm saying is that with young players, there's the potential of a breakthrough that you just didn't factor in. And it's such a pleasant surprise that can you imagine if he becomes the Logan Webb of the second half of the season, Hayden Birdsong? And that's sort mm-hmm. of, you
well,
know.
If he could just be what Madison Bumgarner was in 2010.
God. Well, yeah.
You know, I'm not saying he has to be as dominant, but just Bumgarner was huge as the fourth starter for the Giants in that 2010 playoffs. The Giants won all of his starts in that 2010 postseason run, where all the other teams they won against really struggled when their four starters were on the mound. So, Dan, you mentioned pleasant surprise there. Steven Rizzotto just got me a little pleasant surprise. And this is where we're going to end the show on. It says here, Devone interviews Gwynn at 2001 All-Star game.
Oh, no.
You know, I don't want to get too smolty here, but I've interviewed you when you've come into Seattle the last couple of years. I haven't interviewed everybody in professional sports, but I've never come across a guy who is as talented, one of the best to ever play the game, and as humble and as genuine as you are in character. And it's been a pleasure, seriously,
all right, thank you.
Talking to you, and the best of luck to you and your future endeavors.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, Tony Gwynn, ladies and gentlemen.
That was a hell of a sign-off there.
There you go.
My little butter up there is very professional.
Well, listen to me. I did not suck up the players, but like I said, he was the one guy who was genuinely nice.
Yeah.
Like, most players aren't like that, and that's why I did. That was a little smaltzy. That was a little over the top.
Yeah, I've done it,
a little too much sugar.
I had Logan Webb on Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys back in 2022. This is the first time I've had him on, the first of his three times. Hopefully we'll get a fourth this year. And I told him straight up, like, Logan, based on what you did last year, I think you're the guy who could be the next face of this franchise. And he's like, I don't know about that. He's going to play it cool. And then here we are a couple years later. He's on the mound today. I'm wearing his basketball jersey. And what's Logan Webb? He's one of the faces of this franchise. So we've all been there. We've all buttered these guys up. And
well, it did take me like 3 minutes to cut out the part where Dan asked for an autograph.
Oh, that's good. He's badgering him a lot
Come
there.
Come on, man.
That's where all the explicatives came in. So it's been a fun show, Dan.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Pasta's getting a little too big for the britches, as they like to say.
He's feeling a little too comfortable back there.
I brought this kid along since he was 9 years old, and now he's just...
Well, it's been like, what, 2 years?
Shut up, Evan.
So anyway, I am Sam Lohman, Steven Rizzotto, a.k.a. Pasta, behind the glass. Thank you very much, Steven. Dan, a pleasure as always. We'll do it again next week. This has been the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, and never forget, everybody, Dodgers suck.
This is Dan DeBone saying so long, everybody.
Is that...